welcome to the second episode of the second series of The Health Revolution. Clive DeCarle is joining me as usual today. Later on, we will have a special guest. But first of all, Clive, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about some solutions that we might use for solving the problems we have in the world at the moment.
Well, exactly. On Sunday, I'm putting on a show at the Leicester Square Theatre in London, along with Matt Letizia, Richard Vobes, Rachel from the Colchester Council Watch that you saw, you had on the other day. What I want to present, what we want to present, are a host of solutions. I mean, you know, as most people know, most of the solutions I suggest are health solutions. However, I think I see things very simply, perhaps sometimes, and I believe I've got a simple solution that could be implemented across the world. And how it works is, right now, people go on strike, inconveniences everybody, including them. They go on a march. Unfortunately, most marches don't have the effect that people want. So what if, instead of going on a march, one literally met the neighbors? You know, I know my immediate neighbors, but I don't know many people in my street, for example. And so what if, instead of going on a march, let's say it's a one-issue deal, it's stop war, all wars, doesn't matter which one it is or whatever it is. So what if one knocked on the neighbor's door, let's say it's somebody you haven't met yet, and you say something along the lines of, I'm not a Jehovah's Witness and I'm not a political candidate, so you can relax a little bit. I'm your neighbor. I live just around the corner. And you know, I've always wanted to meet you, but never had the time. And what I was going to do is, with another odd million people, we were going to go on a march today and protest whatever the issue happens to be. But we thought instead, if a million of us actually said hello to our neighbors, find out a little bit about you, you know, is there anything I can help you with? You know, I'm your neighbor. You know, actually meet the neighbors. And using a technique called nonviolent communication, which was developed by a chap called Marshall Rosenberg, he was the lead person in resolving 20 wars in Africa over whatever, a 40-year period. And his techniques are very simple to understand. I won't go into them here, but I think that, let's say, I mean, how many people agree with war? Can't be many. How much money are we having to spend on it, and how crazy is the government? Well, a lot of people will agree that the government isn't helping us. You know, they're supposed to be our servants. However, we are their servants, as far as I can tell, and have been for a very long time. You know, I object to paying my tax to people who are doing things I don't like. I just think it's wrong. So let's say that happens. One person perhaps knocks on 10 doors. Let's say one person there is really taken with it, and perhaps you've handed them a little leaflet, and now they feel like knocking on 10 doors. Okay, so what are you asking for? Well, actually, before I get onto that, of course, there are two sort of people who might answer the door. There are friendly people. Then there's perhaps the mayor or local policeman or the local ticket warden or MP or Pfizer boss or whatever it is might open the door. So the very important thing is that they shouldn't feel threatened. You know, I don't believe that violence is a good thing to go. However, it's very personal with us. I mean, the government, the controllers, have put on us all these rules, regulations, restrictions. You know, can't do this. We've got to chop the trees down. Here in Plymouth, by the way, they chopped the city centre trees down recently. Is that right?
Oh, it is right. Now, there's a whole story behind that, which we don't have time to get into at the moment. But we should talk about that at some point. But look, Clive, something on my mind as you get into the issue of, the types of people that you might meet when you knock on someone's door in this way. Of course, it's really important to take the right approach because a lot of us, and I include myself in this, we become very motivated about certain issues and so on. And sometimes we fall into perhaps a trap of being quite forceful in our delivery. And so I know you don't want to get into the specifics of how to make that approach, but I think we need to say something about that.
Yes. Well, clearly, people are very interested in themselves, and a good way to start the conversation after you got over the fact you're not a Jehovah's Witness is to ask them, first of all, do they have time right now to have a quick chat? You know, at this point, they don't know necessarily what it's about. Depends how you phrase it. So if they don't have time for a quick chat, then one should respect that. And if you are going to talk to them, you want to ask, if you like, permission to have this conversation. And then I believe it should be kept to one issue. You know, one might feel tempted to say, did you have the jab? And, you know, this was wrong or this was right, or you believe in this or that. I think it should be, if you've come in to stop war or to do whatever that one issue is, one should limit it to that, because the shutters come down if you say too much at one time, you know, too much information most people can't handle. So what I see with marches, for instance, is generally if they were holding up a real petition sign, it would say something like, please stop hurting us so badly, you know, or if they're really bold, stop hurting us. But they're not actually asking for something often. They're just asking, please stop doing this. So, okay, what if we were going to ask for something? Well, there are two somethings that I believe would make a massive difference. One would be to remind public servants, and there are loads of them, millions of them, I suppose, you know, the councils, the police, the government, you know, they're all public servants, and none of them seem to know the definition of the word servant. You know, the definition of the word servant should include being nice to the person that you're serving. You know, I'm a servant. You know, we're all servants, actually. But when the servants rebel and start saying, no, we're the boss, you'll do what we say, you know, that's how the mafia started in Sicily, supposedly, that the sort of property barons got so big that they had to organize armed thugs to protect them. And then one day the armed thugs thought, actually, if we kill the boss, we can take it all over. And I think a lot of that's gone on around the world, of thugs basically taken over, calling themselves lords or whatever it is, having stolen and pillaged their way to their wealth. However, so what I'm getting at is that if one reminded public servants they are servants, surely their lives would be better. So instead of punishing people all the time for doing the wrong thing, they'd feel better about themselves. They're actually helping people. I mean, imagine the parking warden helped you park rather than, you know, did nasty things to you. So, okay, redefine public what servant means. But then what's the real problem in the world? It's corporations. You know, all the government departments are corporations. It's corporations out of control that I see as the big problem. So if you're going to ask for one thing, you know, I run a limited company, so director, I'm liable. You know, if I do something wrong, I'm liable.
You're liable, but it's limited liability.
Well, true. But if you're a corporate director, it's way beyond that. You can get away scot-free. You know, yes, the company might get sued, but you as the individual who decided to do this terrible thing, you get off scot-free. So if you change that one rule that all directors, whether they're limited companies or whatever, but particularly corporations, are now liable for their actions, that would change everything in a day.
Yes. Well, I mean, this is a very good point. But you were going to go on to the types of people that we might meet when we knock on the door. I mean, I'm going to say I think this is a very good idea, because community is not just about, you know, it's not just about convincing people to get involved in some way. But I mean, at the moment, how many of us know any of our neighbors? It's about being able in a position of strength within a group of people that are supporting each other. But there may be some pushback.
Well, sort of that's the point in a way, because while we're leaving them all alone, I mean, the truckers went to the middle of the city. If they'd parked their trucks outside all the bad guys' houses, now that would have had a real effect. But blocking the city centre sort of didn't help too much, you know. So, yes, you're going to meet people who are totally against what you're trying to suggest to them. But while I don't want to harass people, I'm not suggesting that we do, that if actually a lot of your neighbours knocked on your door and said, I don't like what you're doing, this is making me impoverished, it's hard hurting the children, it's whatever it is, the fact that they're not going to like it actually is part of the point.
Of course, we're seeing some concern expressed by members of our parliament at the moment about the claim that they are in some kind of personal jeopardy. So this idea kind of echoes with that, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I think it's a very timely thing, particularly because we don't want civil war, we don't want violence, we don't want any of the nasty stuff. We want nice conversations which make sense, perhaps have some documentary backup to give the person. At the end of the day, we are being robbed. You know, we work how many hours a week? How much money do we actually get to keep after road tax and all the taxes and VAT and so on, income tax? I don't know. What is it? People get left with 20%? I don't know. But it's not much. And so everybody's going to be richer if government didn't exist. I mean, let's say government just suddenly didn't exist. Civil service is still there. All the infrastructure to keep things going is fine. But people will say something like, oh, who's going to mend the roads? Well, that's easy. You go online, look up road menders, and you shop around for a decent deal that's quality. You know, you don't need a council to do a lot of things. I mean, I was driving yesterday, and there were 20-mile-an-hour zones in the most ridiculous places. And nobody was doing that. I mean, when did you last go down the motorway and not see a 10-mile roadworks with nobody working there that's been there for the last decade? I mean, everything the government does, as far as I can see, is negative. I don't know if you've come across anything positive recently.
No, indeed. So are you going to be effectively launching this on Sunday then?
Well, I'm effectively suggesting it right now. You know, anybody who's got anything they want to protest or strike about, you know, I think we just take it personally in the most friendly way, because how much richer would we be if government didn't exist? Things wouldn't fall apart. You know, when your parliament goes on holiday at Christmas, does anything get worse? No, it's like a light relief for a week or two. So if they were gone, I don't think it would matter. I mean, you know, I think Parliament as a building, a structure, is quite useful. You know, you could have 600 wise people in there rather than 600 psychopaths. Well, 599 psychopaths. I might be slightly wrong on the number.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yes. I mean, this is all a good point. Well, very interesting suggestion. Well, I will keep you posted on response to this. What would you like people to do? Are you interested in hearing stories? Would you like people to tell you what happens?
Oh, well, very much. I mean, you know, somebody, I have no idea who, organizes these big marches. And what I'd like is for them to get in touch with me and I can discuss, you know, the finer details, so to speak, of the idea, because it needs the organizers of something big to say, actually, let's try it. What have we got to lose? And we've got our train fares to gain. Yeah. It's expensive going up to London to march. And where do you have a pee, you and the million others? I mean, you know, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, these are all good points. Okay. Well, Clive, thank you very much for that. Tell us again, this event on Sunday, where is it and how do people get there?
It's in the centre of London, which I sort of apologise about. It's at the Leicester Square Theatre in Leicester Square. Starts at 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. And it's quite a big theatre. And when I last looked, there were some tickets left. And it should be fun. I mean, you know, we're not going to talk about the problems of the world. We're just going to try and talk about solutions. And there are so many, you know, people are paying bills that they don't need to pay. For instance, you give electricity and so on. You know, our ancestors put in all that work to pay for the infrastructure, and then it got sold to private corporations. You know, the people who sold it to those private corporations didn't have the right to sell our infrastructure. I mean, other people might say, well, there'll be a banking collapse. One can do without bankers, as you know, Mike, by reintroducing the idea, maybe improved, of the Bradbury pound, where for a short period of time in 1914, the British government cut the banks out and printed their own money for a short time, interest-free. Yet some people don't know that the coins, you know, the Royal Mint make the coins, there's no interest on coins. It's only paper money that the Bank of England fraudulently creates. You know, people say, well, I've got to pay tax because if I didn't, the infrastructure would fall apart. But the fact is, they've been printing so much money that our income tax is a drop in the ocean compared to what they're printing. So if, you know, again, it's everybody acting together. If everybody decided to take various courses of action, the system would be inoperable in the way they want it to be. You know, there could be really good things happening in the world if the parasites, you might say, are somewhere else.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, let's move on to the health issue then. And you have a guest, so why don't you begin with an introduction?
Well, thank you, Mike. So maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago, I became interested in a substance called zeolite, which is a sort of powdered mineral rock substance, which draws toxins out of the body. And then I realized, I don't know, 15 years ago, that actually the liquid version was the one to go for. And over the years, various people have come to me with their success stories using various ones. And so a couple of years ago, I interviewed the people behind one particular type, and I was seriously impressed. And for the last couple of years, it's been on my website. And Dione here is a perfect example of somebody it worked very well for. I'm hoping that Dione can tell her story as to what happened and then the remarkable recovery from it and the speed of it, which is the speed that blows me away. Anyway, Dione, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Clive. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I'll be led by you as to what you'd like to hear.
Well, let's start with you were well and then suddenly you weren't. What happened?
So I suddenly discovered that the right side of my face was going numb. I discovered that my right ear had gone deaf, which I thought was from a previous scuba diving injury. So that confused issues a little bit, but I was very off balance. And all of a sudden, you know, my world was suddenly turned upside down when I realized that something was drastically wrong. The ENT didn't help much because although the results were an anomaly, he didn't actually refer me further. He said he could repair the rupture in the inner ear, but it was a 5% success rate, which clearly I wasn't going to go through and opt for that. So the symptoms got progressively worse, and I went to see a neurologist who wanted me to go into hospital and have an MRI. And that's when the whole process started. So I was trying to avoid going into hospital. It was at the height of the pandemic, and I wasn't interested in going in, having seen so many people pass away at that time. But anyway, eventually I had to. I actually had a seizure, and I went into hospital, and they did an MRI the next day and discovered that I had a brain tumor, an acoustic neuroma. So I then ended up getting COVID in hospital, and I had to go home and recover. When I was well enough, I went to see a neurosurgeon at another hospital, one of the other local hospitals, and he had looked at the MRI and he said that the tumor was too big to do gamma knife radiation, that I would need to have it operated on. So they set the date and everything going ahead until I got three delays in a row, which pushed the op out for 3 months. In the meantime, the tumor was growing, and I was on quite high levels of cortisone to try and reduce the inflammation and try and prevent seizures, you know, every day. So I kind of had to lay low and just keep waiting. And because the hospitals were so apparently so full, there wasn't a bed for me in the ICU, which was required after the op. Anyway, eventually on the third appointment date, I eventually went in for the op. Last minute, they let me know at basically at 11 o'clock that they were ready for me, and I had to be there at half past 11. Fortunately, I hadn't had anything to eat or drink up until that point because I wasn't allowed to. And they eventually started the op at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. It was a 6-hour neurosurgery. So the poor surgeon finished after 9 p.m. And to cut a long story short, it was then a long recovery process. I was in ICU for a night and then in the general ward, and I had to have intravenous antibiotics and a lot of cortisone, et cetera. And then eventually I was released to come home and recover. After 2 weeks, I think it was 2 weeks after the op, they needed to have another MRI. So they did another MRI with gadolinium, which they had done the initial one when I went into the hospital in the first place. They had done another one the day of the op, and this was now 2 weeks after the op. So within a 3-month period, I'd already had 3 MRIs with gadolinium. And to cut a very long story short, that MRI showed that they actually hadn't managed to get much of the tumor out. So he recommended that I had to go and have gamma knife radiation anyway, and I would need to do that relatively soon. Otherwise, there was a chance of the tumor growing back. So it was a bit disheartening thinking that I was having this growth removed, and yet I still had to go and have the gamma knife radiation. So they gave me a couple of months to recover, bearing in mind that I had had COVID before that and then the 6-hour neurosurgery plus all the medication. I then flew to Joburg and I had the gamma knife radiation there where they did another MRI before the procedure. And then a couple of months, I'm not sure the exact time frame, but just after that, they had to see what the result was. So, you know, by this point, it's 5 MRIs with gadolinium, which interestingly, when I went in for the very first one and I asked what I was signing for, the lady actually wouldn't say. She just said, don't worry about it, just sign it. It's, you have to have the contrast dye. So, you know, I tried to press her for more information, but basically that was as far as the informed consent went. She wasn't going to give me any more clue about it, and I was already there, so I couldn't actually research it. Anyways, so after the gamma knife radiation, they did another MRI with gadolinium, and then they wanted to do another one within 3 months. And I said to the oncologist, I said, please, can we push it out? Because I've already had 5 within, you know, a 5 to 7 month period. And by this stage, I was already feeling exhausted. On top of the COVID and the neurosurgery, the gamma knife radiation is really, really intense. And I felt completely flat. I was exhausted and I couldn't do very much at all. So fortunately, the oncologist said, okay, fine, we'll push it out a couple of months. And as there usually are, there were delays anyway with the radiology department, and they kept canceling me for somebody else who was apparently more important. And eventually I had my 6th MRI with gadolinium, after which point I came up with a rash on my ankle and I was severely chronically fatigued and I had aches behind the neck. I had all sorts of symptoms and I really wasn't feeling very well at all. But at that point, I still didn't realize that it was from the heavy metal poisoning or perhaps the sum of all the treatments. Anyway, I started to research because I was out of hospital. So I started to research why I had the tumor in the first place. And most things pointed to the fact that I was having head pains during lockdown at the same time they were putting up the 5G mask. So the likelihood is that that was what was happening. That's when the original head pains started. And then as I was walked around the hospital by the physio after my op, he basically said to me that the incidence of brain tumors had increased 7 times in the previous 6 months, which is a bit of a no-brainer, if you'll excuse the pun, as to what the reasons are behind the increase in brain tumors. So eventually I was trying to find out how I could reduce the effect of the radiation, because where I live, it's a beautiful place, but I'm surrounded by 5G masts. So there's a complex next to me. The next building down is a block of flat, which has 8 major, huge 5G masts. If I go 2 blocks down the road, there's a building with another whole lot. And then 2 blocks down from that, there's another building with a whole lot. So besides any little places that may have smaller ones, these are massive ones that are right there. And what I learned is that it's not actually necessarily the people directly below the mast. It's where that radiation touches the ground, which is 200 to 300 meters from that site, which is exactly where I am from the one next door with the 8 massive panels that are kind of at least four times the height of a person. In my research of trying to work out what the problem was, I came across somebody from the UK who was basically looking at doing heavy metal detoxifying, and they were already working with Clean Slate to help people to remove the metals. And having then found out what gadolinium was, I thought this might be something that's contributing to the problems that I had. And I literally had a foolscap page of symptoms, you know, things like food allergies, muscle pains, joint aches, headaches, chronic fatigue. It was just a massive list. Anyway, so I thought I've got to try it, even though, you know, in our South African currency, which is a shocker, it really wasn't an easy choice, but I knew I had to do something. So I went ahead and I ordered the bottle, and literally within 4 days of taking it, and I started on the lowest dosage because I know I'm sensitive to medications and things. Within 4 days, the rash on my ankle had gone, and it was a pretty angry rash. And my glands in the neck region, so this whole area, had been so inflamed that sometimes when I was lying on my side, I almost felt like I was choking. But in retrospect, I realized that it was actually the glands. And initially, before they discovered the tumor, they found that my parathyroid hormone was way above the levels that it should be, and my calcium levels in the blood were really high. So they thought they would just nip out one of the parathyroid glands. That was before they found the tumor. And then fortunately, they found the tumor and I didn't lose a parathyroid gland. And as I was saying, within 4 days, those glands went down. I literally had not been able to see my chin for like a period of about 2 years. This whole area was inflamed and all of the glands went down. Within 4 days, I could see my chin. It looked like I'd lost 10 kgs, but I actually hadn't lost any weight as such, but the glands had gone down. Anyway, so that was a certain sign for me that it was working. So I continued to use it. Within a week, I felt amazing. And it just so happened that it was that week that I went to see the oncologist. And she said to me, "You're looking amazing." I mean, she couldn't believe it. She actually came and gave me a hug. She said, "Wow, you look fantastic." So I told her a little bit about it. And she seemed extremely interested in it for her other patients that are going through treatment. But another long story short, I then went into quite a radical detox. And it was not a pleasant detox, but I knew that that's what it was. I had those headaches. I was feeling nauseous. The brain fog was terrible. I literally was putting the milk in the cupboard and the salt in the fridge, those kinds of things, tripping up steps, just really not doing well. But I knew that it was a detox and I needed to just get through it. So I continued to take the drops. I was taking them morning and evening in a very low dosage. And I still have not gone beyond 3 drops in the morning and 3 drops in the evening, because I actually don't need more than that. And I can feel if I have more that my body is feeling it. It's really sensitive. And the crazy thing is that I could even feel exactly where these drops were working. So I could feel a tingling kind of feeling. Now, I'm not sure that everybody would be able to feel that. And I think I am quite aware of my body and how it functions. But I had this tingling feeling on the top of my head at times. And then I had a tingling feeling at the back of my head. And after I'd gone through the whole detox, I could feel it actually working in the kidney area. So I think it's a product that is quite intuitive as to where your body needs to be healed, and that is where it'll go first, is to the worst areas, and then it'll work from there and work through the body as it needs to be. But the difference, I did go through a terrible detox, which was 5 weeks, which was unusual for me because I thought I'd always been so healthy, which I have. But I think the cumulative effect of the antibiotics, intravenous antibiotics in hospital, loads of cortisone before and after the op and before and after the gamma. I literally had a handful of them to take before the gamma knife radiation. And then all the gadolinium plus the backlog that may have been on my body, in my body from fillings, from water, from, you know, inhaling from the atmosphere, whatever. I think there was obviously quite a backlog. And once I went through that detox and came out the other side, I felt absolutely amazing. I could see the difference in my eyes. You know, when you're not well, your eyes kind of go a glazy gray kind of color, and your skin doesn't look good. Your hair doesn't look good. My hair had been falling out in bunches from the cortisone. So there was a marked difference in the quality of my skin and the clearness of my eyes and in my hair and those sorts of things. And I kind of figured, well, if that's happening on the outside, imagine what's happening on the inside, because I could feel the changes. I could feel my energy increasing, the cramps and that fibromyalgia type feeling in the legs. Not that I necessarily believe in fibromyalgia, but the feeling that I had in the muscles, the lumps and the joint aches and all of that just completely vanished. And I was ticking off the symptoms that I had, my long full scap page of symptoms, I was ticking them off one by one as they were disappearing, until it got to the point that they were all ticked off.
Well, fantastic. Last year I made a video about detoxification from gadolinium poisoning, because people have MRIs without really thinking about it. You know, the clients that I see who are told you need an MRI, I ask them simple questions like, okay, let's say the results are as they were last time, better or worse. Will you or the doctors change anything about what's going to happen? You know, is this test really useful? So many times, you know, if they say, oh, it's much worse, but would you do anything different? No. So all they get is bad news and poisoning. You know, gadolinium poisoning is super serious. First time I came across it, the doctor said, after you've had this particular contrast dye, this was a few decades ago, so it may be different, that you can't go near children under 2 years old for 24 hours because it was such a nasty radioactive.
Yeah, that's frightening.
Well, it's crazy, and people don't know. People, you know, people just think it's safe. It's a bit like CT scans, CAT scans, depending on how the doctor set it. It can be 100 times more powerful than, say, a chest x-ray with a normal x-ray machine. And people are having those regularly and not realizing that you have 100 x-rays, then your life expectancy, so I'm led to believe, is going to be substantially less. So I'd like to comment on the detoxification element, because if somebody is seriously poisoned and they detox too fast, then they might feel worse because too much is being released from where it was trapped. You know, the body often traps toxins in fat. And so often when people detox, they suddenly find that the fat's gone away because that's the safe place to store it. You don't want to store it in the bloodstream or the organs. And if you're detoxing too fast, you can do two things. Well, you could take less of the zeolite, for instance, in this case, the clean slate zeolite, or you could decide to take other things to assist detoxification. So fulvic minerals, MSM sulfur, vitamin C, charcoal. There are a number of materials. Perhaps the most important one is selenium. I'm not doing it really currently, but I used to do hundreds and hundreds of mineral tests for people, see what they were low on, see if what they had too much of. And generally speaking, everybody who had fibromyalgia or one of those absolutely weak, can't barely get out of bed thing, they're all low on selenium. And selenium is very, very interesting as the major detoxifier for mercury, for example, and many, many other toxic metals. So, like all supplements, you tend to get different versions. There's a version of selenium, which is liquid and is incredibly wonderful. Then there's one in the middle, derived from yeast, which is okay. And then there's the cheap type that you might get in a high street store, which is probably the opposite of what you're looking for. So I reckon, you know, anybody listening to this might benefit from seeking out the gadolinium. I think it's called MRI. MRI is in the title anyway of the video, but it does lay out in some detail how to make it less bad. Because, you know, I hate the idea of a detox reaction. You know, I don't want anybody to feel less pleasant for something that I've recommended. That sounds crazy. So, anyway.
I think it's something that you have to do, though. You've got to go through that. Okay, I agree, maybe less aggressively, which other people have chosen to reduce the dosage and go through it slower. But for me, I was feeling so terrible that I rather just wanted to get it over and done with. It wasn't like I was taking very high levels. So no, I just wanted to get it done.
But the thing is, and it's explained in the video, that what happens is you've got the primary toxin, then you break it down with zeolite or whatever it might be. Now you've got a secondary toxin. It doesn't mean that that toxin is immediately out. So you may have to deal with the secondary toxin as well as the first one. This is why adding various materials like vitamin C, simple stuff, can make so much difference, because you can neutralize the secondary toxins.
Right.
So for people listening to this, it could be, you know, you don't have to fear the detox perhaps quite as much as you had to go through. So
was out of the ordinary. You know, most people won't have that reaction. And all the people that I've been in contact with have not had such a radical reaction.
Yes, I've not heard too many radical reactions either, thankfully. So your story is rare, and clearly you were severely poisoned. So how long, you know, 4 days you were feeling stuff. How long did it take from that period until you really felt, actually, I'm really pretty good now? How long did that
I think five, take? 6 weeks, and I felt amazing, really incredible. I actually felt better than I felt 5-10 years ago, you know. So it had obviously cleared things out of my system that had been sitting there dormant or affecting my body that I had no idea about, that could then be removed as well at the same time.
And now, as a sort of maintenance dose or whatever, do you take one drop, or how many drops do you take, and do you do it daily, or do you feel like it?
I am still doing it daily. I figure with the amount of treatment that I had and the amount of things in the environment that we are still faced with, because my dosage is relatively low, I would rather just keep doing it for a little while longer. And I think my body will let me know when I don't need it anymore. So I think at this point, I'd rather just make sure that I'm then preventing anything else from building up that may be coming in on a regular basis from the water or from the atmosphere or foods or cutters or wherever it may be coming from.
Well, I mean, clearly all of us are bombarded by toxins these days. It's coming from everywhere. And I think having some sort of detoxification regime is super important. I mean, it was about 18 years ago that I realized that a cold, a flu, for instance, was a detoxification event. And so I made a small change to what I was doing then, which is I added vitamin D, and I never got a cold again, never got cold or flu. I used to have them every year. When I realized that it was a detoxification event, and if I detoxified in advance, then I
And I think there are certain foods that cause food sensitivity or allergies or whatever you want to call it. I learned many years ago, in fact, when I was in the UK, that I had an allergy to wheat. It wasn't all gluten, it was wheat. Wheat and yeast and sugar. And I started avoiding wheat at that point. And I haven't really eaten wheat in 25, 30 years. And I haven't got sick until I got sick when I went into the hospital and they gave it to me there. I hadn't been sick in literally years from when I'd cut wheat out of my diet. I'm not going to say gluten because I still had other forms of gluten. But from the minute I cut wheat out, I just didn't get sick.
Yeah, the research I read recently said that only 20% of people who cut gluten out get rid of the problem. The other 80% have still got the problem. And generally, it's either from the glyphosate herbicide they've sprayed on a crop if you're not eating organic, or because you're eating dwarf wheat, you know, the hybridized wheat. The guy got the Nobel Prize for changing the chromosome. I mean, it's just madness. So we're eating food that's so unnatural. No wonder people's very intelligent bodies are saying no thanks.
But, exactly. I mean, and I think your body doesn't even recognize it because it's not natural anymore. So it's like any other man-made thing that you put in your body. Your body can't break it down. It doesn't recognize it as food or natural. So it ends up becoming a problem.
Well, exactly. And the body will park toxins in fat. I was reading this fabulous report where they'd fed laboratory mice breakfast cereal as a test. And they got so thin that they escaped through the bars. And given the choice of the breakfast cereal or the cardboard box that it came in, the rats chose the box.
I think they taste about the same anyway.
Yes, very possibly. Well, Deanna, thank you so much. It's been fascinating. And hopefully a lot of people will get some encouragement because it doesn't have to be a tumor that is causing the problem. You know, it could be that what's happening is just an amalgam mercury-based filling in somebody's tooth is knocking them flat, that they can't think straight, maybe they've got a thyroid issue. You know, so many of us have been poisoned with mercury. I mean, if you happen to be living near a coal-fired power station, you're breathing the stuff in. If you're eating a lot of tuna fish, you know, you're eating it.
Yeah.
I think everybody perhaps should try, maybe this is it, to try detoxification using really carefully chosen products and see if a miracle happens, because with some people it really is like that. They don't realize they've gone slowly, slowly down and down and down, and they haven't realized how bad they're actually feeling until suddenly, oh, my God, my brain's working, I can think again. You know, that's what I hear really often. You know, it's like I got my brain back. The brain fog has just lifted.
Exactly. It's such a slow process to get to that point. But once you clear that out, it is quite a miraculous change. It's so obvious you can't deny it.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got inflammation, the body's having to work quite hard to deal with it. So once you've got rid of the inflammation, now the body's got extra energy to do whatever you want.
Exactly.
Dion, I have a question. At the beginning, you were talking about 5G being part of the EMF being part of the problem. Did you do anything to actually remove that form of toxification, or is the other stuff that you've done already enough to counteract what you were feeling from the EMF?
Well, interestingly, I have gone away quite a lot within the last couple of months, and specifically looked very hard at the changes that I feel. And I was away last week, and I came back on Sunday, and I immediately felt pains on my head. Now, I don't feel them all the time. It's very much on and off. And crazily enough, I do use an EMF protection beanie when I'm inside a lot of the time, which is infused with metal fabrics that kind of creates a Faraday cage. But unfortunately, it's not a very easy one to tackle. Now that I have the energy, I need to actually tackle the problem, which is, you know, we're surrounded by here. And I need to see what can be done about it. And if nothing can be done about it, then I need to look at moving. Because I don't think that everybody is necessarily sensitive to it. But the fact that my neighbor and I, who share a common wall, both have exactly the same tumor is, I mean, it's probably mathematically impossible for there to be two people who live next door to each other, who share a common wall, who have the same tumor. And from watching some of the other exposés on 5G, particularly one from the States, the Children's Health Defense had a CHD TV put out a 3-hour expose with professors from all over the world. And they all said exactly the same thing. There are thousands of studies that have been done proving that 5G has a really bad effect on the majority of people. And yet they continue to put them on school grounds, on nursing or care home grounds, and all over the place. So we literally are surrounded by them. And up until this point, nobody's really had a say. But I think it is a major problem. And what they have found is that they can actually turn down the intensity. It doesn't need to be 5G. They can turn the intensity down. You get the same connectivity, but it reduces the radiation immensely. So I think that is what needs to be done. But it's obviously, you know, it's going to be a battle. So I've kind of avoided it up until this point for my own well-being and my health's sake. But now for my health's sake, I actually do need to tackle it.
Yeah, Clive, the reason I was asking that question is because, well, actually, we hosted that symposium that CHD put out. But one of the themes that came from that was the fact that, or at least the research was showing that taking people out of the environment, they actually recovered quite quickly. And so, exactly. You know, this is a key point. So I don't know, Clive, if you've got any thoughts on that?
Well, I'd move today. I'd be out. Yeah. I'd move right away.
Do you have thoughts, Clive, on Dionne's suggestion? Because I agree with it, that people have different levels of sensitivity to these things.
Well, who knows how high they've turned it up. You know, it could be a trigger for that thing they had around the world. You know, conceivably, they might have put something in where if they turn 5G up to a certain level, something nasty happens. I have no idea. But I haven't heard anybody say, oh, with 5G, suddenly everything works better, works faster. Nobody's noticed any difference in any speed or whatever. And, you know, if the government is telling you it's good, well, it's not.
Yeah.
It's a weapon, isn't it? It could be. The army used 5G as a weapon, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are things you can do. I mean, there are things you can do to protect yourself. I've got a couple right in front of me, three in front of me. I've got three devices here. This is an energy enhancement device you can wear as a pendant, or obviously it can't stop the 5G or 4G or whatever coming towards you, but it can theoretically change your body's reaction to it. So, you know, I've got a few little devices. I mean, these two are very interesting. You can get, you know, pour two glasses of water and hold one of these above it for 2 minutes. Everybody without fail that I've tried it on so far can tell which one you've held this for 2 minutes. It changes the structure of the water. And you can just taste it in 2 minutes. It's, you know, I like stuff with proof.
And sorry, what was that you were holding up, Clive?
It's made by a company called, I think it's Spring Life. And what is it called? They're very hard to get, actually. Very, very hard to get. I can't remember what it's actually called, but it's made by, I think, Springfield. Polarizers. They're called polarizers. And inside are various esoteric things like crystals and bits of plants, apparently. But it actually works and you can prove it to people. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, look, why don't we leave it there for today? I'm going to say thank you very much to Dana Johnson and to, well, of course, Clive, because this is the health revolution after all. We will aim to be back in, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks' time, Clive. But in the meantime, final reminder about everybody to come and see you on Sunday if they possibly can.
That would be great. And if they want more information about health, I've got a website which is called secrethealthclub.com. And because I don't really see clients anymore, you'll ask me, well, how do I get the information if you're not doing it? Well, actually, over the last 10 years or more, I've put an A to Z together of as many good answers that I can think of that will hopefully solve most people's problems.
Yes, indeed. And we do have a lot more questions for you to answer. Perhaps we'll do a little bit of that in the next episode. But
yeah,
thank
I'd love
you.
To do that.
Yes.
So, but thank you so much, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Clive. And thank you, DNA, once again. And we will see you again next time. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.